You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to another episode of Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition. Today we have a very special guest on, Mike Fisher DuBois. Our co-host Lisa is off in Hawaii right now getting married, so it'll just be Rich and I manning the fort. But Mike, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. I had my day off to work on my computer today, get all my shit taken care of for the week, and now I get to talk with you guys.
Very nice, very nice. For everybody who may not know, Mike works in Chicago at West Loop Tattoo, you said?
Yes.
How long have you been working there?
I've been at West Loop since last March. So a year and a half-ish now.
Nice.
Right on, right on. Are you from Chicago?
No, I grew up in a little town out in rural Illinois, Polo, if anyone's heard of it, but it's like a town of 2,000 people. So,
oh wow, when did you start tattooing? What year did you get into it?
So I had my apprenticeship in 2010, and I had been scratching and fucking my friends up since like 2007. So I would have been like 16 when I started tattooing, 17, somewhere around there.
I love stories like that. You know, it was like, you know, you're so many artists are like, you got to get a shovel. It's like, man, sometimes it doesn't fucking work that way. And you just got to do it. I mean, clearly it was in your heart and in your soul.
I wish I hadn't done it that way. I have some very regrettable decisions that I made, but you know, I eventually straightened stuff out. It probably took me 8 years longer than it should have to get doing decent tattoo work, but you know, it happened. If I saw somebody tattooing the way I was today, I would certainly try and course correct for them, but
I do the same.
I feel like scratching like 10, 15 years ago is so much different than scratching these days. Cause like in subtle ways, not, you know, at the end of the day, bare bones, like it's probably not a great idea all around, but like, I feel like, how do I word it? Like there's such an abundance of knowledge today on how to get tattooed, who to figure out who to get tattooed by, and getting the supplies to do that is so easy now, like on Amazon. Like it's become so commercialized. Like you could order a tattoo kit today and have it tomorrow, and at the same exact time you could book a consultation with an insanely talented artist at the same exact time in that same time frame. I don't know, it's I'm biased, I'm a young buck, I'm just now coming around it. I had no fucking idea what any of that shit was like, but I feel like it was different then than it is now. Like, you know, back then you kind of maybe had to do that a little more to get a footing in some degree. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, we had eBay and, you know, all the old forums to, you know, hop onto, and people could have, it did often, you know, tell me I needed to stop tattooing. I just wasn't going to listen.
Yeah.
Social media existed before Facebook.
I do hear that a lot, though. There's so many fucking tattooers that you can talk to, and it's like, yeah, dude, I remember starting in my fucking living room. I remember hearing a tattooer at a convention talk about tattooing in a laundromat on top of a on top of a washing unit, because that's the only place he could tattoo it.
I love it.
So you start around then. Before then, were you into art like as a kid before, you know, finding your way into tattooing?
Yeah, yeah. So I've always kind of drawn, and I got in. I just wasn't a super social guy when I was in high school, so I spent just a lot of time by myself drawing, you know, just to sort of pass the time. And then I ended up taking like college level art classes all through high school, doing graphic design and shit like that. And then my parents expected me to go off to college to become like some famous advertising guy. And I tried that for a year, and then dropped out. And that's when I got my apprenticeship, was after dropping out of college. So
who was your mentor?
So I was like the shop apprentice. My buddy Zach Martin, I would probably say was the closest thing to like an official mentor, but the shop just sort of considered me working for all of them. But that was at Inkstorm Tattoos, which is a hell of a name.
Where was that at?
In Sterling, Illinois, which is another tiny little, you know, one horse town. That town has like 20,000 people, not the 2,000 people, but.
That had to have been a difficult way to learn. I mean, how many people were teaching you?
There were three guys.
Were they all consistent or were they telling you different things?
I mean, I don't think many of them were telling me much of anything, so.
All right, yeah.
Aside from, where are my fucking tubes?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, it was a lot of, hey, we need you to go get us tacos and, you know, come back here and draw for us. I think, like, shops in those really small towns tend to, like, be about a decade behind, like, places out here. It was such a culture shock for me when I moved into the city because, like, all of a sudden everything's different. There's this hugely higher caliber of work happening. There's just more consciousness out of the artists for what they're putting out for people. And I mean, shit, I didn't have internet connection for like the first 5 years I was tattooing. There was no internet at the shop I worked at. So,
yeah, I feel like that definitely had to. I mean, obviously, like I've said before, you know, I'm pretty new. I came up in the iPad generation, but when I first started my apprenticeship and even into like, you know, the first year of tattooing, I was still all on paper and shit. And it was tough, you know, having to go onto the internet, you know, obviously is an upper hand compared to scenarios like that. But even that was still tough to like go online, find this reference that this fucking person had because they had a super low quality version. Finding the high quality version, printing that out, throwing tracing paper over it on a fucking light table, like that alone was so time consuming. So I can't even imagine, you know, not having at least that around.
Yeah. And now we're so spoiled. You can just throw that same shitty picture that the client had just into an AI and all of a sudden it'll toss you out a brand new thing and you don't even have to worry about someone calling you a copycat, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't done anything with the AI yet. I'm intrigued. I'm not against it. I don't hate it. I just haven't done it yet. I think it's, you know, I think it's going to be cool, but you're right. It is something that you can use and it's not considered copying. So
there are good use cases for it. But
sure.
I think
I'm sure there's times where it's going to be hardcore negative and bad, and, but that's it. That's everything. You know,
I started toying. Sorry.
I said, I'm gonna have to monkey with that AI stuff here soon.
I started toying with it the other day, actually, on Midjourney, and I was just like, let's see what kind of shit gets spat out. And Midjourney doesn't really have a very good grip on what an American traditional style tattoo looks like. I was like, oh, American traditional style panther jumping through portal. It was just not spitting out cool shit. I just wanted to see what could possibly come of it. Cause I've seen some people online talk about like, hey, like we have to get with this or we're going to get left behind.
So just to give you a tip next time, instead of telling it American traditional, tell it in the style of, and then name an artist who you think there might be a lot of flash online from.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's the way that it's going to give you like good drawings.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. That feels so dirty.
Oh. It is, yeah.
It's that super feels dirty. So fucking dirty. That's crazy though. I mean, it's so obviously, you know, a big theme on the show here is talking about, you know, respect, tradition, and the industry as a whole, and kind of how it changes and fluctuates. And it's honestly really fucking crazy to think about AI now becoming, you know, one of the new frontiers that we're introducing to this industry, especially because when I started 4 years ago, the big thing was like, should you use an iPad? Should you use a rotary? Like, you know, and now it's like, should you use artificial intelligence to it's crazy. Well,
I guess like the big thing that teaches us is like everybody just accepts the old technology as, or like the, you know, what used to be really cutting edge, like, you know, kind of debatable whether it was acceptable stuff, all of a sudden stops being debatable once we have the new thing to debate whether or not we should be using it. They'll come out with like robot arms in 6 months or a year, and then all of a sudden everyone will be like, well, of course you use AI to draw. You gotta spend all your time competing with this robot arm.
It's funny, the next thing's gonna be wireless tattoo machines that are controlled by Logitech controllers. Too soon.
Yeah.
But no, that is absolutely wild to think about. Do you think, because I think that there's still a very, big chunk of like old guy mentality kind of still hanging around in the tattoo industry. Do you think a good portion of that kind of boils down a lot of times to just people needing something to like dislike or complain about? I know that there's a line in the sand that gets drawn with everything, but
I feel like that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Tattooers are generally grumpy, so yeah, there is a lot of, we just need to be upset at something that we don't know how to use. But especially when it comes to like the AI stuff we were just talking about, or even using iPads for everything, there are definitely reasons you shouldn't. A brand new tattooer isn't going to get the muscle memory that they will get from painting flash from an iPad. That'll just never happen. No amount of drawing with an Apple Pencil replaces having a good paintbrush in your hands. And using AI is the same way, where if you're needing something to just spit out an image for a client right now, just like a walk-in, or I use it for shit like ladies' faces all the time because
I didn't understand you.
Yeah. I use it for shit like ladies' faces all the time, because otherwise I've ran into before, I've done a portrait of what's supposed to be just a random woman, and then somebody recognizes, apparently it's a famous Indian actress or whatever. And so now all of a sudden somebody has a real person on them. Whereas if you're using AI, they're just having a random person that doesn't actually exist.
That's interesting. That's valid. That's a super valid use for it.
Yeah. Or I used to take photographs of all the roses that I tattooed, because I got sick of just finding whatever off Google Images, because they were all already done. Now I don't take any rose photos, because I can just type rose photograph into Midjourney and it'll spit me out as many as I want that are all unique.
I've been taking a lot of photos of flowers recently for reference.
Midjourney, man. Save your photography time.
Well, just sometimes you see that flower out and about and you're like, whoa, that's fucking perfect.
Totally.
I don't know why it took me so long. For the longest time, I'd just be like, all right, just think really hard about a rose and what it looks like, and now make it a cartoon. And I'm not upset about that being kind of my mentality for a while, because now I can Sharpie on a fucking rose and be like, ah, cool, that's tight, but yeah, recently I've been taking a lot of photos of just a lot of different flowers in general, and I'm like, putting this in the bank.
But I gotta tell you, I'm glad I'm not considered a grumpy old tattoo artist. So what is considered old timer now? Like, how many years? Because I've been doing it for a minute. Am I considered an old timer? I started in 92.
I think you have to be grumpy to be an old timer. So as long as you're in a good mood, you're not considered an old timer.
I like that. Because I always tell, I talk to some of my older friends, and it was like, loyal to the coil, and you shouldn't use an iPad, that's cheating. And I'm like, man, I'm not Amish. I will embrace technology, because time is money. My iPad, again, I love it. But however, I can draw on paper, and I can do the things that I used to do still. For me, it's just time, and I love it. I haven't moved to the pens and the batteries yet. I'm not really into that shit, but AI is brand new to me. What's that called? I'm going to write this down. I was going to forget it.
Midjourney? Yep.
I will give you a rundown on how to use that, Rich, because it's
okay.
it's a little complex if you've never used Discord before.
Yeah, Discord's a pain in the ass.
You've used Discord?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I don't mean to just assume.
But it's because you're an old timer, apparently.
Because you're an old fuck.
He's trying to make you an old timer.
No,
go ahead. It's not important.
I was just going to say, I was very surprised with how not old guy-ish you were, like grumpy old tatter dude you were, Rich, to be honest with you. I mean, I just, not to say that I expected that, but I remember when I was talking to Lisa about starting the podcast, and she was like, oh, you know, I should talk to my mentor. He's, you know, over 30 years in, you know, we should ask him about it. I remember thinking like, okay, 30 years in, like, that'll be a great dynamic. We'll have a grumpy old guy to bring into the mix.
I mean, I have my thoughts about some stuff, but again, it doesn't matter. You know, I remember when I started, thermofaxes weren't a thing. Thank fucking God for thermofaxes, you know. And
when you started,
We used their hectograph pencils. It was like there was the acetates and then fucking hectograph pencils. And the motherfucker about those, you trace a big design, you put it on. If the stencil's not right, you have to redraw the entire thing. You can't just reuse a stencil. So like, again, I'm all about technology, you know, bring on the new thermofaxes, bring on the new ways of doing it, you know, because again, not Amish. I'll embrace technology.
Yeah, totally. So
the hectograph pencil just like gave me like nightmares. Because the shop that I learned to tattoo at, it was so far behind the rest of the world. I still used a hectograph pencil for like 3 years.
Terrible. They were terrible.
It was fucking awful. Like I had no idea that I could have just hopped on the internet, picked up a cheap little printer that would have cost like $25 or whatever, and it would have spit out all my stencils for me. Never knew that.
Surprise.
Yeah, kind of fun.
Sorry, let's take it back to where we were before. So you started in this kind of like podunk town. What was it called again?
Sterling.
Sterling. Okay. How long were you there for?
I think I was at Inkstorm for like two and a half years. My apprenticeship was super quick. They wanted me to start making money for them. So I was like called a tattooer, but I was still doing all the apprenticeship, mopping the floors, opening the shop, all that. After only like 3 months, they were like, okay, make us money. I mean, I had also been tattooing for like 4 or 5 years at that point, like outside of a shop. So,
yeah.
You know, I kind of knew what I was doing. Like I knew how to set up a tattoo machine, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that trial by fire sort of shotgun approach, do you think that helped you in terms of like how you learn best and your approach to work?
Oh, no, not at all. I think it was really a pretty big negative on my career, and it slowed me down a ton. Even still today, I catch myself with like weird habits and I'm like, I've never seen a good tattooer do this. Why am I doing it? And it just occurs to me that it was probably something that, you know, I built from having done it the wrong way for so long. When I left Inkstorm, I went to a tattoo shop in Iowa, where there was a really talented tattooer, named Adam Tyler, who's like one of the better realism guys in the Midwest, I'd say. Especially at that time, this would have been like 2015. He was, you know, a pretty good, well-known guy. And that's really where I like started to pick up stuff. But even then, you know, I worked for him for almost 5 years and it was really slow learning stuff. And I think that was because I had all these bad habits already just cemented into my head.
Yeah, I could totally see that. My apprenticeship was similar to a degree where like I think when I started taking like walk-ins and stuff, I was maybe a year into it with like pretty little supervision for the most part. So when it came time to actually start working on the general public, there was kind of a lack of guidance that came with that. And I think I also, you know, think that for myself, that was definitely kind of a setback in that regards, because I did work like that for, you know, a year, year and a half. And I think at that point, because I had left that shop that I was at around that year and a half mark after, you know, starting to take walk-ins, or sorry, maybe it was a little less than a year. But either way, it took about a year and a half to almost 2 years after graduating my apprenticeship before I started to feel like, okay, I'm doing solid work that's healing up good, that's aging well, and is work that I can really be proud of putting in a portfolio. And, you know, I found a necessity to travel from that, you know, travel, go to other places, learn from people, and just kind of overall get a good idea of what else there is in tattooing. And I think, Rich, we had talked about that a little bit on our first episode, because Rich is, I mean, super, super well traveled in terms of tattooing and, you know, the amount of places he's worked at. Do you do conventions quite often, or?
Yeah. So this is maybe a good segue into some of the other stuff that we had kind of brought up talking about. I traveled a ton for several years when I was like, and I was going all over, like probably like 4 or 5 conventions a year. Which isn't, I guess, a ton for a lot of people's standards, but it's more than most tattooers do. And I was really thirsty to just get good and get my name out there. And I had this ego to match that sort of mindset. And being out there, already kind of having like a bit of a drinking problem at home, but then being on a convention, I just started really hitting it and thinking, okay, cool, I am like a fucking rock star. I got this. Look at me. I'm hanging out in St. Louis this weekend. I'm in Philadelphia this weekend. Oh, next weekend I'm going to be in Texas. I'm so cool, you know, doing my fucking tour. And that sort of created these habits where I started to think like, hey, I'm not doing bad tattoos when I'm out all night drinking and drugging and partying. And it's okay if I have a couple beers in the morning before, because it's a convention. And you know, the work's not turning out terrible. So I start to kind of get laxed on a lot of those ideas about how I should be behaving when I'm like back at home. So, you know, when I, when my drinking got really bad, it was at the same time as my convention traveling was, because I was really feeling like I had to keep up. I'm a tiny guy. You know, I mean, at the time I was even tinier because I was in my mid-20s. So I probably weighed 20 pounds less than I do now. And I was keeping up with these adult men who had been in tattoo shops their whole lives. And, you know, or trying to, I guess, is the better way to put that. So, yeah, you know, my drinking started to get really, really bad. And then I basically kind of fucked myself out of like a job because of the way I was acting when I got back home. I was treating everybody like shit. And then I kind of cut off my conventions altogether because I got to the point I couldn't trust myself with them. So I went like 5 years without doing a convention, and it's only been like super recently that I've started going again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I totally get how that can be. I mean, you know, I think that, I mean, this is pretty obvious, you know, in tattooing, there is this culture of like, I remember when I was an apprentice hearing a joke of like, well, if you're going to be a tattooer, you got to have at least 2 vices, you know, and if you're a level, if you're over a level 5 tat wizard, you have 3. And if you're a level 10, you got 4, or, you know, whatever. And like, haha, whatever. It's at the time it was funny. And ironically enough, I was sober throughout my apprenticeship. So I didn't really relate on that too much. Aside from smoking weed, I've kind of always been like California sober. But I definitely can see how, you know, when you have a problem, when you are an addict, like being in that scenario and in that kind of situation and that environment is just absolutely like the most enabling thing that can possibly happen.
Well, we also
totally.
There's no, you know, there's no rules in tattooing. You know, you can, you know, there's no drug tests on Monday morning. There's no corporate, there's no human resources. We can, right. You know, and that, and I know a lot of people that went down the road and just kind of destroyed themselves with chemicals and alcohol and drugs and shit. And it breaks my heart, because some of the people that I know are super talented, but they're kind of done now, which is why, like what we talked about earlier before we started the podcast, why I celebrate people that are making better choices and really working on themselves and getting sober. I fucking love it. I think it's fantastic. It deserves to be cheered, you know, and celebrated. And, you know, so.
Yeah. And it's amazing too, how quickly shit can just sort of turn around when you do just like start to make those decisions too, you know? Cause yeah, you, like those guys that you see that go down these dark paths. I was one of them, you know, I was getting really bad. And it's like almost like just like the next morning, you know, or, you know, like a week or two after you stop drinking, all of a sudden your work ethic comes back and you start seeing this like notable quality difference. Like you said, you had looked me up on Facebook. I guarantee if you go and look at whatever I had posted in January of 2021, January of 2021, you would not even believe that it is the same tattooer that you were looking at earlier today that did stuff.
Yeah, dude. And another big thing too, that kind of comes with that, I think that's hand in hand, is I think the difference in work ethic and feeling when you start to also change up your diet a little bit too. Cause like, I mean, I've recently had to change up my diet to mostly just whole foods. Cause I very recently have found out that I kind of drank myself into liver damage as a 24-year-old. And like now between the time that I got my most recent blood panel to an ultrasound that I have to have on my liver, I have to eat healthy and I have to stick to whole foods for the most part. And like sticking to that the last like 2 weeks, like I have never felt better, you know? And I think that overindulgence and binging and especially drinking in tattooing really goes hand in hand with like kind of a shitty diet, you know?
Totally. Well, and a lot of it too is just having a conscious lifestyle, right? Like when you're paying attention to the way you're acting and like how you're eating or how you're drinking, or if you're somebody who's like, hey, I got to go to the gym or I have to meditate X amount of time, anything where you're actually like taking a second to focus on your behavior can just have like this ripple effect throughout everything else in your life.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, huge thing for me since COVID was self-care. And that's what that is. Totally. You know, understanding that you need time to meditate. You need to eat the foods that make you feel good, that doesn't drag you down. And, you know, you need to focus. Like for me, I needed to focus on art. Like I love the year that I was shut down that I didn't tattoo, because I did art every day and it was fantastic. But I'm an annoying optimist. I always take whatever and I turn it into something good. But yeah, it's all self-care. And I think that's important. A lot of people, you know, God, when I first started tattooing, it was the same thing. You smoke, literally smoking cigarettes with dirty gloves. I didn't smoke because I'm weird, but watching people smoke, literally they take a dirty glove. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, that's nasty. But yeah, you're right. You know, I think people are becoming a little more aware of the self-care, becoming sober, making better choices, because all that shit really does fuck with your motivation, your inspiration, all that stuff. So I don't know what I'm getting at, but I'm just babbling.
I mean, I think either way, it's really cool to be in an age where, especially for tattooers, we're starting to see more and more people talking about getting sober and having issues. Like I was really surprised to see, and this is obviously kind of a more mainstream example, but I recently had seen John Nelson post about his sober chip that he had. I can't remember how long it was, but it's just really cool to see tattooers being transparent and vulnerable about the issues that they have. Because, I mean, like I said, I haven't been around a long time in tattooing, but just to see the attitude change in the last 4 years has been really fucking cool, you know?
Totally. It's so good for us to talk about those issues, you know, whether it's drinking or a drug addiction, or you talk to a lot of people who really struggle with their self-esteem or social media, like sort of tearing them down. Or you talk to women all over the industry who have been harassed throughout their career. And when you can put those things out in the open, they really stop, you know, tearing you down. You stop becoming a slave to those things. and it's freeing. It can change a life just to talk about something.
Yeah.
So like on my podcast, when I have these guys come on, you can tell they'll talk for like 5 minutes with me usually. And I usually cut out most of that first 5 minutes that they're talking, because there's just a moment that they switch. And all of a sudden they're like, wait, I can actually talk about this shit. Somebody's listening. And it's such a cool feeling, because you can tell so many of these guys have never thought that anybody cared about what they had to say about how they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, I, the issues that I've had with drinking, I've never taken to like AA or a recovery program of any sorts, which is something that's changing upon recommendation from my therapist. But I think it's really, especially, you know, especially for tattooers, again, obviously this is a tattooing podcast, but especially for tattooers, it's really cool to be able to know that there is a support system out there, you know, and that you don't have to worry about getting made fun of for not wanting to drink or not wanting to smoke or, you know, whatever, like, you know, finding a sober pathway. And I think that there's obviously, there's, I'm sure there's definitely a lot of people out there still that are fucking assholes about their friends wanting to get sober, you know, no doubt. That's not even just in tattooing, but just in life in general. But, you know, like, I guess, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but again, it is just really fucking cool to be in that, in the era of, you know, having that be more common, you know?
Totally. Well, and if your friends are giving you shit about not drinking, it's definitely time to find a new group of friends to hang around with. Say,
like, are they really your friends?
Yeah.
If they're picking on you because you're making better choices.
Yeah.
Those are friends you don't need.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I got sober just by accident, I stopped talking to most of the people that I socialized with because they were all at the bar. And I literally just stopped going to the bar one day, you know. Like I wasn't at the bar telling them for weeks on end that I was going to get sober. For all any of them know, I died. You know, I was drinking enough, I could have died. And none of them have hit me up. So that is just like an example in my life, like how little these people actually like cared about my situation or about me as a person. I was just somebody to fill the stool next to them.
And another thing that we were kind of talking about before the show started, which obviously kind of goes hand in hand with like the sobriety thing, mental health. I mean, in tattooing, I feel like it's still a very new concept to bring to the table to talk about, and really just how important it is. And obviously you can be straight edge and deal with mental health issues. It's not like it's, you know, just something that applies to drugs and alcohol, but, let's talk a little bit about that, just because obviously, you know, Rich, you were bringing up the pandemic and just how refreshing it was to be able to take the time to make art on a consistent basis. And I can only imagine like the kind of change that would make in the industry if it was normal for people to take time to just do that, you know?
Right. That actually, the whole COVID thing and the shutting down really, really changed even how I want to work going forward. You know, I want to do more walk-ins because I don't want to sit and take all the time to do custom shit all the time. Cause it drains. Like I have a budget every day of like creative juices, you know, and I feel like now at this point in my career, I want to be selfish with that. I want to create for me. You know, I don't want to try to fit, you know, I want a tiger and it's got to have 13 stripes because I got 13 family members and it's got to have like three claws of one paw because I got three cousins. It's just like, just let me fucking draw something. You know, you want a tiger? Let me draw a fucking tiger. But that's not how it is now, unfortunately, you know, because everything people have been conditioned to think that everything has to have a meaning, which isn't a bad thing, because if I don't clarify that, I'll get a lot of hate for it. You know, sometimes, you know, getting memorial tattoos and getting stuff like that's awesome. But sometimes, man, I miss the days where people just come in like, I want that, and just get something off the wall. I miss that, and I love that, and I kind of want to bring it back, you know. But
totally.
I feel like we have to be overdue for that, right? Everything in tattooing kind of runs in a circle. So, right. I mean, I've seen, even in just my career, kind of the wave up of this hyper-custom work, and it feels like it's already sort of crashed, like, especially as more people get their hands on like all this fine line stuff off Pinterest, it's all looks so similar. We have to be moving back in towards like people just wanting quick flash and easy flash, you know, just stuff to pick out and something to get quickly, especially like as the economy seems like it's getting weird right now. This might be your time to strike with it, man.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, going back to the mental health stuff, it was like, you know, just deciding, you know, God, I remember when I first started tattooing, I didn't know I could say no, you know, and now with all the stuff, with how my career went, I have no problem telling someone I just don't want to tattoo them. I will recommend someone who's going to make them happy what they want to do. But if it's not really, if I'm not into it, I'm not going to do it, you know, and I have ADD. So like my brain's going in seven different directions. But I don't know. I think I'm the happiest now I've ever been because I've made the choice to really be aware of what I want and what's important to me and try to find a balance. I think at least my generation, you're conditioned to like, you got to work, you got to bust ass, you got to hustle, you got to work 6-7 days a week. And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about opening up a tattoo shop just like for me. And I think I want to work Wednesday through Saturday and that's it. You know, Wednesday, Thursday will be like custom days, bigger stuff. Friday and Saturday will be just walk-ins. And if I don't do anything on a Friday or Saturday, so fucking be it. I'll sit and paint, I'll paint more flash to put up on the walls, you know, but
yeah, totally.
But that's, I mean, again, the mental health stuff, really deciding to put yourself first, to put what you want, how you want to do things, steering your life in a certain direction, making better choices for yourself. I think, you know, there's been such, again, I'm 51 years old, and there's such a stigma from when I was a kid, like, you know, you don't show emotions, you don't show feelings, you just tough it out, you rub dirt on it, I think that's all bullshit, and I hate that's in my head, you know, and I'm really excited about where things are going. Again, like I said earlier, I'm kind of a gross optimist.
I feel like a lot of tattooers have that mindset of just tough it out, kind of jammed into our heads from day one of our apprenticeship. Even before that, you know, to get the apprenticeship, we had to go in and be like, oh yeah, by the way, nothing you say is going to bother me. I'm going to take it. I'm going to listen to it. You're going to get to yell at me as much as you want for the next year. So, you know, we kind of think shitty of ourselves sometimes because of that.
I also think being creative, like, we're tortured souls anyway, because I do think that being an artist, we see things differently than the average person. I think we see things a little bit different. You know, I could be completely wrong, but I know my perspective of like the world and most of everything is a little bit different than what the average Joe is, you know, yeah. If that makes any sense at all.
No, totally. I mean, there's like there's a certain kind of person that gets attracted to tattooing, you know, and that's obviously not true all across the board, because there are some people that I meet that are like kind of just like anomalies in tattooing. But those are usually like. And I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, but like the art school kids, you know, like the ones that go through, they get a degree and then they're like, okay, like I want to apply this to tattooing. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. But I think that there really is. It's a very good point that you made with like, you know, we're treated poorly from the start of our introduction into this, like, of, you know, of course, so many of us have like self-esteem issues or deal with like imposter syndrome and stuff, you know? And I, even outside of that, down to like my generation of, you know, folks being raised, like, I apologized to my therapist the other day. I was like, yeah, sorry, I don't want to bother you. She was like, you pay me to help you. With your dog, like, you don't fucking bother me, okay? Like, you need to like get that sorted. Like, we're gonna work on that, and that's you know, super true for kids my age, and even people, you know, younger than me, with like the whole like, oh, rub some fucking dirt on it, like, get back to your shit, and even more so in tattooing, you know. And I think it really does apply to like pretty much every facet, especially like you were saying, Rich, being able to say no to stuff, you know. Like, I was brought up in a shop where that wasn't a thing. You didn't say no to anything.
Right.
And then I left and I went to a place that really prioritized like positive reinforcement and like focusing on the right things at the right times. And then went to another place where it was like, Hey, we have a fuck ton of walk-ins. You need to do absolutely everything all of the time. And like, I did that for 8 months and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Working in this environment makes me want to fucking die. I'm out. And then I left and went back to where I was before. I was like, this is fucking awful. And I don't know. I guess, like you said, you know, we're tortured souls. So you know, how far can you really shift the paradigm in one go? But yeah, I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point.
No, well, I think too, we have to worry about the Google reviews and so that, you know, if you say no to something that, you know, one, you know, it's not going to heal well. You know, they're going to regret it. You know, it's a bad idea because you've done it before, or at least I have, and I've seen the people regret it. They're going to be mad at you. Well, it's my body. I can do what I want. I'm like, yeah, but you know, I don't have to do that. I don't have to be a part of that decision of you made. There's tons of artists out there that'll do it for you, mm-hmm. you know, but it took a while for me to realize I can say like, you know, I'm not doing that. Cause I strongly believe in karma, you know, and it's going, you know, I just don't want to do something that's going to be negative on someone's life down the road. The money's not worth it, you know?
But it sounds like too, in situations like that, you know, obviously you're going to try and convince your clients to get the right tattoo rather than tell them you won't tattoo them. And when you have to tell someone no, like, as much as it sucks, you're actually really telling that client, like, I don't care about your attitude right now. This is wrong. We're not going to mesh. At least that's how I get, you know, when a client won't listen to my advice and they won't understand that I'm a part of the process too. I'm not just a tool for them. I'm a creative individual who's working on a project. And when they ignore that, I'm like, we're not going to work together no matter how good your idea is. You could be coming to me with a perfect idea I don't need to change, but if you're not going to take my input, I don't want to work with you.
Right.
And that's part of that mental health thing too. I have to be respected as a person when I go into the shop.
Well, it's like, you know, boundaries.
Yep.
Boundaries, you know, all that stuff, you know, and again, talking even about therapy, you know, the fact that people are even openly admitting they go to therapy, you know, for my generation, you just didn't do that. And I'm a hardcore proponent of therapy because we're all learning how to be better versions of ourselves. You know, you don't hit 20 years old. You're like, got it. I'm perfect. You know, I think therapy is fucking awesome. I go all the time. You know, I think, you know, doing like getting sober, if you've noticed a pattern of like self-destruction, you know, changing your direction in your life, I fucking love that. I think that's great. And I wish more people would be a little more self-aware and realize like, hey, you know what? These friends that I have that I think I value really aren't your friends. Like we talked about earlier about, you know, if they're going to give you shit for being sober, they're not your friends. You know, you gotta worry about number one. And that's what it all boils down to.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm just preaching.
I think a big thing too, and I don't want to bring up spirituality into this all too much, but obviously like I'm kind of a follower of the Buddhist teachings, and like one of the big things in, you know, learning the Dharma is, you know, understanding that pretty much all things are empty of inherent existence, like the idea of non-self, which is literally just boils down to like nothing is static. Everything is all ever changing, you know? And, you know, I remember one of my last bosses, like he was grilling me about taking off early on certain days because like, I'm sorry, but if I'm in a tattoo shop and it's 6:30 and there hasn't been any walk-ins for like three and a half hours, I'm probably just going to go home. Like there's probably not much left to the day. And at the time I lived kind of far from the shop anyhow. So I was like, you know, whatever. And I remember telling him like, you know, I wake up in the morning and my fiance is at the gym and then I leave to go to work and I'm here for 8 or 9 hours. And then I get home and my fiance's in bed ready to fucking go to sleep. And I remember just being told like, well, yeah, that's our lifestyle. And at the time I was like, okay, but I'm also a few years into this. And the last few years that hasn't been my lifestyle and I have actually survived and paid my bills. So like, I don't think that is necessarily the lifestyle. And you know, sometimes that is, you know, not to hate on you know, people that live their life that way, because there are a lot of people like their whole fucking life is just tattooing, and that is totally fine, and I respect that. You know, I admire that a lot because I fucking love tattooing. But I think that the idea of things being able to change is new, you know, like it's, you don't have to absolutely take everything on. Am I saying that there's, you know, no value to pushing yourself and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone for the sake of growth? Absolutely. You know, like I said, I'm pretty green, you know, I'm less than 5 years into this. So I understand that. And I've witnessed that helping my growth, you know, pushing myself to be like that, you know, it helping me, you know, immensely. But I think that there's just this expectation of like, shit should not change. There's only one way to do it. There's 1,000 right ways to do it. There's for sure wrong ways to do everything. Like some things it's like, yeah, that is not how you fucking do it. Like all across the board, but there is 1,000 right ways to conduct yourself in this business and to stay productive and to, you know, create healthy boundaries that you can implement to focus on your mental health.
So I think you kind of said that there's a lot of guys out there who their entire life is tattooing. And it's funny to me that you talk about that at the same time as you're talking about your spiritual beliefs and you trying to make balance and stuff, because that is a real problem with guys. And you said that you don't think it's a problem. I think it's one of the biggest problems in our industry is when people make tattooing their entire life and follow the rules that they were taught in their apprenticeship to some religious adherence. That causes real issues. It causes grief between coworkers. It causes people to, you know, just collapse under the weight of it all in their personal life. It causes people to forget about their wives and their husbands and their kids. It causes people to just burn out, and it causes a lot of bad backs because people don't even realize that they should take time to go to the gym. So like that's the biggest problem in mental health and tattooing is people's entire lives. You know, we think that it has to be, it becomes our messiah. And it's all we care about.
Sure. I guess when I say that, I'm thinking anecdotally, you know, like there's a couple of people that I know of where it's like tattooing. And I guess even now that I think about it now beyond that, it's not their entire life, but there's people that I know that like, you know, are literally just on the road doing their thing. Like they don't have a family at home and they're just worried about working and, you know, doing their thing. And, you know, there's a few people that I know that's like, that's all they do. And they do right by their client and they're really nice people, you know? So I guess I'm speaking more anecdotally than generally, because I think that they're, you know, just like you mentioned, there is a lot of toxicity that comes with like prioritizing your personality and your whole life just around this thing that has kind of otherwise been built on a lot of toxicity.
I feel like I can talk to that, because I'm at a point in my life in my career where I'm like, I don't really know what else to do. Like downtime, I'd rather work, you know, and I'm trying to figure out that whole balance thing. Like just going and sitting by a body of water and just doing nothing is really uncomfortable for me, you know, because I've worked so long and so hard. It's just like now, like I feel like I'm doing nothing. I feel like I'm being a bum if I'm not creating or producing all the time. And I don't know. it's a strange thing to, you know, being a tattoo artist was my huge, there you go. It was a huge priority and a huge part of my life. And now it's like, it's kind of not. I want to be more of an artist. What a good dog.
Yeah.
So I wasn't trying to distract you with my dog. He wanted some attention.
So what are you trying to do now with your life to, you know, besides tattooing? You said you're trying to just sit and spend more time kind of doing nothing and getting to know yourself a little more, or what's up with that?
That and well, again, since COVID hit, all right, I did things a little bit backwards. I never learned how to paint tattoo flash. Like I started in the 90s when things were biker stuff, you know, Cherry Creek and everything, you know. So, and I got so busy for so many years that I never had time to sit down and like really explore any kind of like actual tattoo art on paper. So when COVID hit, I literally ordered a bunch of watercolor paper, and I taught myself how to paint, and I fell back in love with art again. So right now my priority, yeah, I'm going to tattoo. I do love tattooing. However, all right, I'm backtrack a little bit. I'm going to name drop a little bit too. The last conversation I had with Lyle Tuttle was about me going out to Ukiah and was going to paint with him and do some art with him. Well, he passed away. So I kind of made a promise to myself that, you know what, I'm going to go travel and I'm going to go do art with all of my tattoo heroes that I've been, you know, that I've put up on a pedestal for so long in my life. And I've created a network and all those people now are my friends and I can make it happen. So the rest of my life, I just want to spend on an art adventure. I want to go work with people that I've been inspired by. I want to go do art with people that, I mean, even artists that are younger than me that are, you know, really good. I want to go sit and do art with them. You know, that's more of a priority to me than, you know, being the best tattoo artist ever. Cause I'm a solid tattoo artist. I do good work, you know, and I don't really have a style. I'm a street shop guy. I want to just do whatever walks in the door, you know, unless, you know, it's something that I know it's not going to work, but I think you get the idea. I just want to explore art more. I want to do everything. I want to get good at everything. I want to get proficient, not good. I want to get proficient at everything. And if you go on my Instagram later and creep on my work, you'll see a lot of pictures of my dog lately, because that's really kind of my main priority. But you'll see all the different styles that I try to do. You know, when I was shut down, I would try to draw in like you said, when you're talking about AI, like in the style of. Like I've done some pus head style stuff that like I really kind of impressed myself, you know, because I just like wanted to see how he did things, just really, really exploring and learning, like Lyle Tuttle and how he did stuff. You know, a lot of the older artists that I've always liked, I wanted to try to emulate their style, but it taught me something and how I can be a better artist for myself too, because I think I have my own style, but I don't really know. So I'm still learning. And that's so exciting, being like 30 some years in, being like, fuck yeah, man, there's more to learn. You know, I like it. Shit, man. You know, I feel fortunate to be, again, that's probably why I'm not a grumpy guy, because I'm still excited about learning about the art and learning about different styles of art and different ways to do it. And I don't know, it's just pretty much my only thing that I care about right now. That and my dog and my two kids. That's it. What are you doing, both? Grossly optimistic.
I think that's awesome, though. I think that more people should be grossly optimistic in this industry and this craft that is so notoriously pessimistic, you know?
True.
But have you ever caught?
Oh, go ahead.
Have you ever caught yourself in one of those like really pessimistic phases, like in your career?
Absolutely. This was a good transition back to the mental health stuff. My default setting is what I like to call it, like when we're imprinted from our parents and like how things are. My default setting is super negative, super angry, super shitty, super everything's garbage, everything's shit. I've done a lot of work to put that default setting. And there's days where you just, you know, you're not feeling it and you're just like, everything is shit. This is stupid, you know. And for example, my whole career, I've always kind of hated American traditional. And one of the things that I threw myself at during COVID was I wanted to understand it. I wanted to learn it. I mean, I've painted with some guys like Ray Youngman and, you know, these all these old timer guys. And I've had the opportunity, but I appreciate it now. I don't love it, but I don't hate it like I used to. But I can do it. You know, so, someone told me, he's like, you know, you talk so much shit about stuff, but you can't do it yourself. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to fucking learn how to do it so I can talk shit about it.
I'm going to learn how to do it so I can call them all fucking idiots.
But the thing is, learning how to do it really kind of taught me that, you know, it's not an easy style. It looks simple, but to get that look, it almost have to turn. That was so funny. Me and Ray Young, you guys know who Ray Youngman is, right? He's out of Chicago. He's out of Downers Grove, actually. We don't talk anymore, but that's a whole other story. The whole time we're tattooing, we're drawing together. And he's like, you're putting too much detail in there. He's like, I'm like, but that's how my brain works. You know, he did a skull and he's shaded the straight line across the head. And I'm like, but that doesn't communicate that it's round. He's like, I don't want it to be round. I want it to be flat. I'm like, so, I mean, that's what I get excited about, trying to understand the way other people see things when it comes to like tattoo art and how things are done.
I don't know. Totally. I mean, I think that there is always something to learn in everything, and you know, and I think traditional in particular gets a lot of hate. Like the last time I was up at Skinny Buddha guest spotting, we were all out at the bar, or maybe we were at Lisa's house. And Tony, if you've met Tony, he was like, traditional is so fucking easy, bro. Because he had a traditional appointment the next day. And I was like, dude, let's do a line off. I promise you, let's do a fucking line off. Like, let's see who can pull a straighter, crispier fucking line. And he was like, I got that. That's so easy. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's do it tomorrow. Let's do a fucking line off. And, you know, it's rudimentary stuff. You know, like I got into American traditional because I didn't draw at all before my apprenticeship. Like I drew a little bit as a kid, but I was not good. I was not gifted. I've always been a fucking music nerd, you know, like still am, but my mentor did that. So that's what I did. And there are a lot of instances where, you know, like your buddy was talking about, like, I don't want it to express that curvature, or I don't want it to express this or that. One of the things that I was taught during my apprenticeship was like, in traditional, it doesn't always have to make sense.
Right.
Which is totally cool. But that I think that also just speaks more to the people that really push the envelope, that make it make sense in right. that same kind of art style. That shit is so fucking cool to me. Like, I love the Cap Coleman shit, and I love like the Josh Bovender shit. And I also really love the people that are doing traditional style tattoos that like look realistic almost, you know?
Right.
And I mean, just the fact that there's always something to learn and always a way to get better is what is so fucking cool about tattooing to me. You know, obviously, again, I'm 4 years in, so I have so much further to go. But like, I can constantly consume this content and this kind of art and always be excited and invigorated about it. Not to say that I don't have days where I'm like, but
I think life has its ebb and flows. What you're talking about, like, there's a few years where I just want to quit. It's, you know, I don't know how I can tell. It's like what you were saying about like at conventions, everyone wants to party and have a good time, and I was not that guy. So I totally felt like I was an outsider. I was an outsider in a community that is like promotes that we're all outsiders. So it's an outsider of an outside. Yeah. If that makes any sense. You know, everyone's like, how come you're not drinking? I'm like, I got to work tomorrow, man. You know, I want to have a fucking clear head, you know, because I value the art more than I value, you know, my, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't have to be a member of Jackass to be a fucking tattoo artist. You know, I really want to focus on the art. And I don't care about being a part of that. I don't care about popularity. I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. But that's all learned through a lot of therapy and like going back to the mental health stuff. You know, everyone wants to be part of a community. And I kind of learned that I kind of don't give a fuck. Like, I'm me. I'm going to do me. And if you don't like me, then cool. I'm going to still do me, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing. When I started doing conventions sober, like the last couple that I have been to, have been fucking awesome. I think everybody should like just decide like, no, go be the sober guy. You know, you still go out to dinner with everybody. Let them all go out to the bar afterwards. You can get back to the hotel room first, fucking read a book, wake up at 7:30 a.m., be the first one in the shower, be the first one at the booth, and already be, you know, tattooing, get to do an extra tattoo every day because you're not having to nurse a hangover.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's just so much more fun to travel when you're not miserable the whole time.
Fucking amen to that.
Yeah, hard, dude, hard fucking agree. Like, I do a lot of conventions with a buddy of mine named Matt. His Instagram handle is Stay Gone. And this dude, literally his entire life is tattooing, family, and fucking jujitsu. Like, that's all it is. And like, we've progressively started to do more and more shows together. And like, we get in on a Thursday and it's like, all right, let's grab fucking food. After that, he goes to train. I go back to the Airbnb. I play fucking Warzone or I play fucking Skate 3. Like, I draw and that's all I do. Whole weekend, slay fucking walk-ups, eat food. That's fucking it. And like, there have been a couple shows where it's like, you know, let's party, let's do this, do that, that I've done outside of traveling with him. And those are fucking never nearly as fun, dude. Like, I love dropping in somewhere and experiencing the cuisine, the food, the area, And then if I can find like a boxing gym or something, I'll go train and then I draw and I fucking play video games. Like, that's it. I don't treat it a whole ton differently than I do from like being at home, aside from checking out the things that I can't find at home. But it's so much more enjoyable that way. Like, you just, I don't know, there's just more substance to it, you know?
Totally. Yeah. It's the only time I get to read a book without my wife interrupting me every 20 minutes to ask me a question. Like, I'll sit at the hotel after, you know, a day at the show for 3 hours while everybody's out, just nose deep in one of my books. It's great.
This is random, and pardon me if I'm incorrect on this, but did you just have a kid recently?
I did. Yeah. Like, she's 8 months old now.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Because I know a lot of tattooers that became parents like at the same time that they started tattooing, or you know, maybe a year or two into it. You're obviously a little bit more tenured now, you know, you're, I guess, technically like 15 years in or so. Yeah. At this point, how is it, because is this your first child?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. What is the process been like becoming a parent at the same time as, you know, being at a point in your career where you're sober, you're doing stuff that consistently is in the same caliber. How has that been?
It's great. 'Cause I get to take 3 days a week off, you know, so I'm home with them 2 days a week. And then one day I'm home, but I'm doing like drawings and, you know, admin work and all that shit. So I get to be around a ton. I'm fortunate. I think a lot of tattooers are fortunate enough that because I don't drink, I don't party, we try and live pretty humbly. My wife doesn't have to work, so she gets to be home with the kid all the time. And that's just amazing as a parent. Like, I think that's something every parent wishes they could do. And tattooing allows me to do that. And, you know, the worst part is that I don't always get to tuck her in at night, but the flip side of that coin is I get to spend 4 hours with her in the morning, and not a lot of parents get to do that either. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I will say too, and I'm sure any parent out there can agree with this, you do not go into work with nearly, like, with, you go into work with way more motivation and understanding as to why you're there when you have a kid. It just completely flips your mindset. It's like a super weird, like, just like black and white change in how you think about things. You know, that it's just, it really can just be like life altering when you let it be.
What do you think about that, Rich? Obviously being a parent yourself.
He's 100% correct. You know, the first time that they handed me my first kid, I remember thinking of, like, this, my life's not my own anymore. My life's about her. And part of the stuff that I figured out being a parent is like, my kids are older than both you guys. How old are you, Mike?
I'm 33.
Okay. No, you're about as old as my oldest daughter. I'm always trying to self-aware, like, I'm setting an example for them. Even is that they're adults, you know, and when they were little, I did it all the time. Like, you know, I wanted to show them that, you know, to get something, you got to work real hard, you know, and sometimes you have to sacrifice, like, tucking them into bed sometimes because you're working and what you're providing. And that's what, you know, the financial provider and the family does, but stuff like that, you know, and it, I don't know. I loved it. I love being I've done some cool shit in my life, but being a dad is even above being a tattoo artist and an artist. I mean, Mike, you follow my Facebook. I spend more time with my kids. I still spend a shit ton of time with my kids, even though they're 20s, 28 and 30.
Yeah. I mean, your kid, I mean, I'm not saying it's derogatory, but your child is literally the reason you didn't move to Louisville.
Right. Yes. my oldest had a heart attack with me, and she said that, you know, she didn't really want me to move. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not moving. Because that shit's still important to me, you know. I want to be a part of their lives still.
I love hearing about, like, relationships in a family that are that strong, because, like, that's something I felt like I never really got out of my family. Some of that's my own doing, you know, going through what I did and what I put other people through, but a lot of that's on other people too.
Right.
And to see people who still late in life have like awesome relationships with their children, it just blows my mind. My wife has that too, and I just don't even understand it. And I hope I get to create that in my own family.
Well, I mean, that's just it. You don't have to hope. You just got to do it.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, I used the word earlier, like you got to steer it that way. Cause I was not, my parents were shit. My parents were terrible, you know? And I remember thinking as a kid, I'm like, when I have kids, I'm going to do better. And I really did better. But the thing is, did I do it right? Who knows? However, I still hang out with them. I still text with them every day. I still talk to them all the time. We plan trips together and they're adults. So clearly I did something okay. You know, yeah. I don't know.
And I mean, and on that note of like, did you do it right? Again, it's kind of similar to tattooing where it's like there is an absolute wrong way to do things, but there's so many right ways, yeah, you know, right. Like, yeah, the fact that you have that relationship and it's so, so, you know, deep is, you know, telltale sign of, you know, the answer to that question, I guess, like totally.
I'm excited for you, for Mike, to have an 8-month-old. It's so fun. It's terrifying, but it's fantastic. You know,
she's learned how to pull down the baby gates and they're attached to the wall. So I have no idea how she keeps doing it.
Strong book.
It's fun.
Yeah.
That's so cool. No, that's awesome though. I mean, and I can only imagine that, you know, the fact that, you know, and I kind of use this phrasing with pretty much everybody in tattooing, you know, having a career that has given you so much, I'm sure has also paired with just like how fulfilling it has probably been to become a parent, you know, because obviously there's lots of people who become parents all the time that are in, you know, a completely different kind of career, and it's like, oh fuck, like this absolutely does not help me in becoming a parent, you know. I can only imagine. Like, I'm not a parent. I don't know this.
I think that's probably less to do with the career and more to do with very conscious work I had been making in my recovery, mostly, that allowed me to really understand what sacrifices I could make easily, what sacrifices I could make difficultly, and what sacrifices I shouldn't be making at all. And let me prioritize myself that way so that I could do things like be the only person working in our house, you know? Like I see tattooers all the time who, you know, there's them and their spouse both work so that they can take care of their kids, because the tattooer is like, oh, well, we just can't afford insurance. Like, well, I can afford insurance out of pocket. It sucks, but it's definitely something that can be afforded, and something you should afford when you have a kid, you know. But I was consciously making those choices where I meditate for a good 10 minutes every morning. You know, it's not a lot of time, but it is enough time to sort of dedicate a little chunk of my life to me. And that really helps. Or we do stuff in my house where, like, comes 7 o'clock, 7:30, whatever, when my wife and I have dinner, I don't really touch any work stuff afterwards. I try and make sure that we're having dedicated family time between me and her then. So, you know, yes, tattooing lets that stuff happen. But I feel like any career outside of like truck driving, you could allow yourself to have that sort of schedule.
Sure.
And tattooing, if anything, makes it harder for some people because there is such a culture of, hey, you got to go out to the bar with us after work.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I just tell people no when they invite me out. I'm like, I got to go eat dinner with my wife. That's far more important to me than hanging out with you.
Yeah. And I think it's a good segue to kind of probably our final discussion point. Obviously, like I said earlier, you know, this is a show that is focused on like respect and tradition and the history of tattooing. And, you know, I remember talking with a guy who worked in Bath Beach, Brooklyn in the 70s. And I remember him making a point to me, which I had never even thought of before this point, which was at the time when he was tattooing in Brooklyn, a lot of tattooers were not just tattooers. They were also butchers, or they were truck drivers, or they were mail carriers. obviously we live in a day and age where like the absolute norm now is you just do tattoos. That's it. Like I've had so many people over the last few years that are like, oh, is that all you do? And for a while it was like, yeah, it's fucking all I do. What do you mean? I was fucking homeless during my apprenticeship. Of course this is all I do. Like, but it's pretty wild to think that for a majority of the history of tattooing, you know, at least in terms of like, you know, the Western adaptation of it, the more modern approach, that it has only recently become that. And I guess a question to shoot out to both of you guys is, you know, at the time of your guys' introduction to tattooing, was that something that you guys had also seen, like multiple professions out of a person that was in this?
By the time I got in, no, that was not. I came in, like, my apprenticeship was in 2010. Yeah, but even by then, you know, the TV shows had been out. People were making plenty of money tattooing. Nobody had to have another job.
Sure.
I worked at a plastic factory, third shift and full time at a tattoo shop for the first year of my year of tattooing.
Really?
So, and I had a infant and a 1.5-year-old. So that was a really tough year, but you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep much that year.
Fucking, I can only imagine. It really is crazy though to think how things have changed in that regard, you know, among other regards too, so many things in tattooing. Like I said before, just in what I've seen in the last 4 years, there's been so much growth in so many different areas. I can't even imagine the last 15 or the last fucking 32.
31.
31. Oh, sorry, 30, I'm a fucking 30, year off.
31 in September.
But still, I can't even imagine the kinds of shit that you guys have seen come and go. I mean, you guys were both into this. I assume 15. Hey, bro, don't lay on those. God damn it. I can imagine 15 years ago, rotaries weren't really much of a thing aside from like maybe like swash drives or some direct drives that people would have.
Actually, I think rotaries kind of started around 15 years ago. They were always around. But they like Neo-Tat started to become a thing, and you know, I think it was about 15 years ago.
Yeah, I learned how to tattoo. I lined with a coil, but I used a dragonfly to color with. That was like the fancy machine that, you know. But I don't even think like FK Irons didn't have any rotaries out yet. They were all the swash drives, and I think Bishop had one out. I had one of those fucking E6 plastic box ones. The Swiss made or whatever they were called. I don't know if you remember those. Worldwide Tattoo Supply sold them.
No, I know. Even when I started the Spaulding and Rogers, they had a rotary machine that they sold in the catalog in the early 90s. So it's been around. It's just, yeah, it's just now become more. I love my rotaries. Like I have some coils and I just had one custom made for me and I still haven't tattooed with it. I've had it for about a year.
So heavy. You use a Neo-Tat, right, Rich?
I do. Yeah, the Vivacis.
Yeah, fuck yeah. That's what
it's
I said.
A good machine.
Those Neo-Tats are workhorses.
Everyone says they can't line with them. I line I don't know. But then again, I think I've been doing this long enough, I could probably use just about anything.
At the end of the day, you're just poking holes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like I said, I know how to make coils. I know how to cut my own springs. I know how to build machines. I know how to tune them. I know all that shit. So like I put my time in, I put my work out. I can relax and use really light disposable tubes and rotaries and not kill my hands anymore. I've actually gotten picked on for that. They're like, oh, you're fucking like, you got some fucking sissy fucking hands. I'm like, dude, you know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the losing my money bump was like one of the like worst things that happened to me. And that probably like was like 6 or 7 years ago. I felt like I had worked so hard to earn it. You know, like I was like, oh yeah, I'm a real tattooer. I've got that giant callus and it's gone now.
I don't have one either anymore. Yeah. I've never even thought about it.
My money bump has only developed from gloves. It's on this fucking finger right here where I'm pulling.
Huh. Yeah. So you don't even know what a money bump is then.
I know what a fucking money bump is. I just don't have one. Come on. I remember I told my mentor that. I was like, yo, dude, like I fucking started getting this money bump. And, like, it's fucking weird. I don't even know why it's on this hand. And he was like, yeah, that's fucking weird. You don't really draw on paper all too much, right? And I was like, I mean, yeah, I just do flash on paper and, you know, that's pretty much it. And he was like, huh. And then it dawned on me literally a day later. I was like, oh, yeah, it's the finger I use to pull my gloves onto my fingers. Doesn't count.
They just started using gloves when I first started tattooing. Literally, that was about the time when people started actually wearing gloves to tattoo, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to a podcast that Carrie Barba did. If you guys know who she is, she owns Outer Limits Tattoo, which is Bert Grimm's old shop, I believe. Yep. Yeah. And she was talking about how she thinks she was also one of the first people to start wearing disposable gloves in like 1983 or 4. And I saw something recently. Oh, God, I can't remember what tattooer it was, but I think Professor York might have posted about it. But there was a tattooer in the 60s who was using disposable gloves.
I saw the article you showed about that. It was the gay man from Chicago who took over Sunset Tattoos, and he started using gloves at Sunset Tattoo.
Robert Benedetti?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sounds right.
I got his signature. I collect autographs.
Okay.
That's right. So. That's who it was. Yeah. That shit's fucking wild, dude. I mean, yeah. I think it's so weird to think that people at any point weren't like, this is fucking gross, but I'm also someone that hates having shit on my hands. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah. Not about it.
When I was again, I'm gonna name drop again. Okay, backstory. Lal Tuttle was the guy that I read about when I was 9 that made me want to be a tattoo artist. We met in 95 and we became really good friends. So I was at his house and he pulls out this yellow bucket, this plastic bucket, and it's just got a million little rings inside of it. And that was the bucket that he used every day. He put water in, a little bit of Listerine and a sponge, and he never cleaned it out. Just dump the water and change it. So it's all this years of built up biohazard.
Love it.
You know? And he just barehanded, just reach into it, grab it, wipe the skin, put this thing back in there. It's like, fuck, man.
That would make me throw up. That would make me vomit everywhere.
I was a little creeped out by even holding it with my bare hands. I'm just like,
like, I shouldn't be touching this.
You know, we know so much better now, but like, you wouldn't like even know there was anything in it back then, you know, like, yeah. You know, there might be a little bit of hepatitis worry or like TB worry, but I mean, HIV wasn't even around, you know?
They're like, so, I changed my fucking needle for the shading. What else do you want from me?
Yeah. You know, you let it sit overnight. It's fine.
I remember Lyle was telling me about when he had like a machine for every color and he wouldn't change the needles for like months. And he's like, they got sharper the longer you used them. Right. Right. He's like, you gotta make a line. I would tattoo my fingernail and just burr up the needles a little bit. And I'd go right into the skin and make a thicker line. I'm like, holy shit, man. Things have completely changed.
Holy fucking shit.
I worked with a guy who used to swear the same thing, that the needles colored better if they had already been used on a couple tattoos.
Mikey's like, what the fuck?
Dude, one of my pastimes is like learning about like the nerdy shit in tattooing, like liquid dynamics and you know, all of the little stuff in pigments and shit. And I had a buddy send me an article, Ryan Othis, who runs Better Tattooing. He sent me an article where people, these scientists ran an experiment to see how quick a needle dulls. And they used two or three different types of steel that are typically used in tattooing needles. And you'd be surprised. Our needles fucking dull in like 4 passes. And obviously it's different than, you know, they dull in a very micro sense. You know, it's very, very small. It's not like if you fucking saw through a table with your fucking saw through your cap with your needle. But surprisingly, needles dull super fucking fast. And there's not much we can do about it. It's not like we're going to fucking pull out a needle every fucking 3 minutes to pull more lines. But it's just crazy to see as people become more and more curious about like the actual physics of what's going on in tattooing these days, how much we learn, like, oh, this shit is not all fucking strippers and cocaine, you know? But yeah, crazy. So yeah, I'm sure that this is probably about the point where the conversation is coming to a close. I feel like we've hit some really good topics in pretty thorough ways. Mike, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys.
Of course, appreciate you carving out the time to come hang out and chat and stuff.
It was a pleasure meeting you, man.
Yeah, you too, Rich.
Thank you to everyone who has listened thus far. We will see you next time on Pull the Line.